You have to be your biggest fan. And when things are really tough and they're really rough and nothing's working, but there's something inside of you that says, I just have to follow that. Because you don't know who you're going to meet, who you're going to meet, who you're going to meet.
Welcome to Better Days with myself, Georgie Crawford, and my friend and performance psychologist, Jerry Hussey. What an episode we have for you today, all about why we keep ourselves small. And Jerry tells a story about a GAA team that will stay with me for a very long time. First, before we get into it, a quick word from our season sponsor, the Health Insurance Authority. The start of the year is when a lot of people's policies renew, so it's a great opportunity to review your health insurance plan, because without even realizing, you might be overpaying for health insurance, or you could be on a plan that no longer suits your health needs. The HIA is a government agency, completely independent. They're not selling insurance. Their role is to help you make an informed choice. You can use their free health insurance comparison tool. It's on their website. There you can see what plans are out there and what might suit you better. It's really easy to use. Head over to hia.ie for more. We're thrilled to be here today. Welcome along, Jerry. How's it going?
I'm good again.
Jerry, just wanted to actually mention, because you joined us at the National Concert Hall, and so many people like had listened to you but never seen you at a show, and the feedback was so incredible, but so much of the feedback was about how funny you are on stage. Did you feel that on the night? Just for anyone listening who was at that show, give us a bit of feedback.
I mean, I loved it, and honestly, I thought we were doing a Q&A. So it was unplanned, and then I just said, okay, don't overthink it, just go out and be you and think of ultimately, what are your five key messages? So what you saw on the stage is me. Sometimes, because when people like to interview me about trauma and the gut brain axis and about heavy topics, I enter that space. But naturally, I'm a bit mad, and naturally I think I'm a lot more fun than most people would imagine. And most of my mates that know me, and most of the one-to-one clients that I work with all the time, they just know I'm half mad. And they know that I'm good fun, I'm up for anything. And a lot of people who know me and listen to me with you or listen to me with Diff, they say, geez, Jerry, you need to show your more funny side. And I don't know why naturally I don't, but I think on the stage in the concert hall, that's how I am at home. That's how, if I'm out in a night out, I don't take it too seriously. And I do believe that we can address difficult things. So even on the night, I spoke about challenging things, but it doesn't always have to be heavy. Sometimes you have to bring a bit of fun and a bit, like, we're all in this thing together. We all struggle. We all are up. We all get down. So even people who come to my shows at the end will say, God, I never realized you had a sense of humor. So it's a good reminder for me. Maybe I just come across too heavy or too deep at times.
I think you're one of the funniest people I know. And that's why I find myself leaning towards people who are funny. So that's why I just have always gravitated towards you, because I love when someone is deep and funny, and I just find you so captivating. You told a really good story at the show about how we are in our comfort zone, and you used a story about Starbucks.
Oh, yeah. It's about, ultimately, it's about the human ego. What is the human ego? The human ego is not a bad thing, even though I tend to rattle it a lot. But the ego is actually a very good thing. The ego is a sense of self that you have created, and it's been created maybe with the help of stories of other people. So the ego is a fictional belief about who you are. So I'm not good with money, I'm not very clever, or I am good at maths, or it's the stories we tell ourselves. And once we form a belief, once the ego holds that, the ego then wants to keep you safe. So that's why the ego is not your enemy. It just wants to keep you safe. It wants to keep you alive. So if you did something yesterday, if you ate something or drank something, or you behaved in a certain way, or you felt something, and it didn't kill you, it just wants you to do that again. It doesn't think long term. So the ego is, please don't change. be the same, think the same, do the same. So the story I told was about, you know, someone goes into Starbucks and they're looking at the menu, and the menu is 28 different coffees, and but they always go for flat white, and they like a flat white, and they know if I have a flat white, it's good. But they said today, I'm gonna be different today. It's Christmas, so they see the skinny latte macchi cappuccino with cinnamon. Oh, they say, God, I think I'm going to order that. And then the ego, the brain says, no, don't order that, because that's a big risk. What if we order that, we don't like it? And then not only will we not like it, but I won't get what I want. We need a flat white. Please go for a flat white. Please go for a flat white. And as you're trying to have this fight with yourself, you're turning, and suddenly there's a big queue. The person behind the counter is looking at you and, what do you want? What do you say? Flat white, please.
Flat white.
So the story is that in life, every single morning in life, there is a whole menu of options we can take. From the food we eat, to the words we think, to the things we do, the way we travel to work. And yet, despite that infinite options, we tend to choose the same all the time. We tend to revert to type. Now, just like the coffee, the minute you drink the flat white, instantly we kind of feel better. So I always say to people, you know, maybe it's a coffee in the morning, your first coffee, or maybe it's your glass of wine on a Friday night. How long does it take after that first sip of coffee or wine until you say, oh, I feel better? And most people will say immediately. But it takes coffee or wine at least 45 minutes to hit your system. But you do feel better because your brain has hit you with dopamine because you obeyed the program. Mm. If you obey the ego, you get a hit of dopamine, and that's how we get addicted to things. It's not necessarily the caffeine in the cup that made you feel better. It's the dopamine you got for obeying the program.
Wow, it's so powerful. And I think I told you this story before, but I remember my therapist was speaking about a client who was trying to give up smoking. And they said, I just love rocking back and forward on this broken step in my back garden while I'm having my cigarette. And she said, well, why don't you try rocking back and forward on your step at 9 o'clock every night without the cigarette? And you're still doing the ritual, but you're not smoking the cigarette. And sometimes we just get trapped in certain ways of thinking. And I think actually, Jerry, that ties really nicely into this dilemma that we got in. Hi, Jerry and Georgie. After listening to your recent episode on embracing your life, something deep was triggered for me. I realized I carry a quiet belief that some people are allowed to be seen to want things and to take up space, and others like me should stay small. I see people openly chasing dreams, building businesses, having public profiles, naming what they want without guilt. Meanwhile, I question myself, am I allowed to want this, to be visible, to go after something simply because I want it? I know this comes from early conditioning, being the good kid, not being too much, staying safe and unremarkable. But that way of living no longer works. My soul feels like it's pushing me to be seen, heard, and trust my desires without shame. What actually creates this divide, is it fear, ego, or a lack of belief in our own enoughness? And how do you move from asking for permission to giving it to yourself? That's so deep, yeah, isn't it?
It's so deep. Very well thought out. So this listener is obviously a great awareness. It is the ego. It's a little bit deeper than that. So let's start off with the idea of, we just talked about the coffee. And for a lot of people, the coffee is a coping mechanism. You feel tired, you drink the coffee. You feel stressed, you have a glass of wine. So we're all familiar with the idea of coping mechanisms. What are coping mechanisms? Coping mechanisms are things that give you a sense of safety and familiarity in a pressure situation. Now, the single biggest coping mechanism that we all use every single day, and it's only a coping mechanism, it is something that we engage in. It's something that we do. The single biggest coping mechanism is your personality. That's all it is.
Wow.
You weren't born with it. But somewhere along the line, because we have this deep drive inside to be part of a tribe, because when humans inhabited the earth first. We were scared, those big animals, and the only chance of being safe was to be in a tribe. So at some point in your life, you start to do things and act things, and very quickly you recognize which things got reward, which things didn't, which things made you safe, which things didn't. And quickly you became the peacemaker, because keeping peace gives you a role. You became the problem solver. You told yourself a story about what you're not good at. So a personality is completely fiction. It is a fictional set of beliefs to keep you in a space of safety. People say, that's just who I am. It's not just who you are. You take two babies' brains 10 minutes after they're born, both identical, and yet 10 years later, they're completely different people. Now, we are born with natural tendencies. So we're born with tendencies. And those tendencies need to be explored and uncovered. But by people saying, I'm the safe one, I'm the peacemaker, I'm not very confident, you can get confident in all those things. So I told a story in my last book about a retreat I was at with Miriam. And Miriam often says, well, I was the younger one, so this and that, and depending on where you are in the family, can have a different role. And eventually she said, well, I'm the youngest in the family, and I'm the youngest in the family, and I'm the youngest in the family. And then the coach, when she was finished, said, when are you going to stop telling that shitty story? When is the youngest not going to be important anymore? You're a free, independent, powerful, autonomous woman capable of living the life you deserve. So stop looking back, stop looking up, stop looking to other people. Ask, what's the life I want? Who would I need to be to achieve that life and go become that person? So you're looking at a guy who travels the world, who gives talks, who writes books. But at one point, I was a person who had a terrible stammer. I couldn't speak. I had no self-belief. I was terrible at school. Failed my junior cert almost, and yet went on to win awards at university. So if you look at me when I was 15, academically poor, terrible speaker, no confidence, terrified of rejection. But none of that was my personality. That was just a learned way of being.
Yeah.
So the greatest habit we have to build, or the greatest habit we have to break, is the habit of being ourselves. Dispenza says, if you're not willing to change your personality, you can't change your personal reality. So this listener has a personality that believes that either A, she needs other people's permission to go after her dreams, or B, she believes it's wrong to go after your dreams, or maybe C, she believes I wouldn't fulfill them anyway. So what we have here is simply a permission issue or a belief issue. No one's holding you back. No one's stopping you. No one's stopping anybody.
Yeah.
And no one's coming to save you. So wait for someone to inspire you or motivate you. It's not going to happen. So at what point do we identify, what do I want in life? Then identify what type of person would have those things. And when you write down the type of person that would have those things, write down the person that you are right now. And if there's a gap, don't worry on creating the life you dream of. Focus on becoming the person that would have that life.
Yeah,
so that's the willing to change your personality, change your stories, change your beliefs, change your physiology, change your chemistry, and change them every day until that new elevated sense of self becomes the known.
I love that, because I think from her email, she has said, some people have permission, but I don't. Actually, the only person that can give you permission is yourself. So we'd get it a lot just because we're involved in a run club and things like that. People coming to us and saying, oh, you are great doing all your runs. I could never do that.
I know. It's terrible, the stories we tell ourselves. And ultimately, I was on a call this morning with my one-to-one clients, okay? So this is how well coached they are, so I'll take a bit of credit, but this is how clever they are. So I'm telling them that I'm trying to buy this new car, and I'm telling them that I'm having issues and I don't want to buy it, and I've paid the deposit and I'm waffling and all of this, right? And then, so the client said, right, Jerry, let us think about what's happening here. So one of them says, it could be just to finance money. So work out the finance. And if you can't afford it, don't flip and buy it. Simple as that. But he said, if you can afford it, it's a deeper issue. And the deeper issue is a subconscious program that either it's wrong to drive this type of car because you're uncomfortable with it, or it's a self-worth issue that you don't deserve it.
Yeah.
Because either way, he said, if you can't afford it, why the hell would you not go in and buy it? Life is short. You'd be dead before you know it. What's stopping you? So the question they asked, my clients asked me this morning, the issue is never the issue. So it's always a self-worth issue.
Mm.
And most issues in life, whether we, like I challenge once where, not a challenge, a lovely conversation where I did a podcast maybe with you, and I was talking about, I said, excuses are like farts. They get to the point where you even tolerate your own. People who are good at making excuses get to the point where they don't even know their own excuse. They don't even know their excuse stinks. They kind of, they tolerate it. So one of my clients in my own community said to me, what's the difference between excuses and, like, sometimes there's real, you know, there's real facts. So I said, well, tell me a fact. I said, in fact, write down five facts, and I bet you by the time you write down the five, most of them will be. So she came back and said, actually, you're right. Four of them, when I wrote it down, just excuses. But one fact I can't change. One is I have a boss, and the boss is a disaster. And the boss is a pure bureaucrat. And I spend most of my time doing unnecessary jobs, ticking boxes on meaningless tasks because my boss prioritizes meaningless tasks. So how do I change my boss? My answer was, it's nothing to do with your boss. The question I asked her, what type of meaningless person would stay in a job that requires them to do meaningless tasks?
Mm-hmm.
So the question I'm asking is, if you're in a situation where you know that you're engaged in meaningless tasks for a person that believes in meaningless things, then why don't you leave?
And why don't people leave?
Because they have to pay a mortgage. Well, that even that statement means, well, I have a wage now, and if I leave my job, I'll never find another job again. Maybe get a job that pays you more money. Well, I've this, well, I've that. It's a self-worth issue. People who have this idea, well, if I leave this job, I'll never make money again. So that means that you think you can only make money in this one job. So we have this idea of, we stack up all the reasons why we can't do something. And then ask yourself, what's the one reason why I would do it? But very often we're waiting for permission. We're waiting for the perfect time. Or we're waiting for a guarantee that it's going to work out. There's no guarantees. So go back to me with the car. Buy it and get on with it. Or don't buy it and get on with it. But now I'm suffering. The worst decision is indecision. So it's go back to the heart. Does it feel like the right thing to do? And I'm not asking, does it feel like the easy or the hard thing to do? Does it feel like the right thing? In this one short little life that we get, which would you lead to the most regret, doing it or not doing it? And the question then is, can you give yourself permission to pursue a life of meaning and joy and love? And if you can't give yourself the permission, it means because either A, you believe you don't deserve it, or C, you haven't the self-worth. So it's all a self-worth issue.
Yeah, it's so true. And it took me so long to see that. But say in your life, there is somebody that you can see has so much potential and is in this comfort zone, is there any way that you can give that person a kick up the arse, or do you have to come to that realization yourself?
Ultimately, you can challenge, you can question, you know, you can ask, you know, God, you have so much potential. Why would you not? Or have you ever considered? And you can probe and you can ask. Ultimately, the hard work is going to be them. And some people are just happy being comfortable. And we can't be more ambitious. Like, I went into a team once, right? And it was a county team, and they had, you know, just been, you know, beaten in a competition, but they had this huge potential. So I went in, first time to meet them, didn't even get to talk yet. And the manager came in, he's kind of laying out the law. He said, this is how we're going to train. We're going to train this. We're going to do this. We're going to lay out this. And it was a heavy, heavy schedule. And he was saying, these are the amount of sessions. And then one player was like, well, how do I find the time for all these sessions? The manager said, I have no idea. And I don't really care. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to win in All Ireland. And if you're interested in that, you'll find a way. And if you don't bother. He said, no one's compelling you to be on this team. And then the team started having this thing. And one of the things he brought up was around alcohol. So they wanted to know about this alcohol ban. Well, what does that mean like? Well, he was kind of saying, look, we have to have little periods. And then the conversation was, well, like, what if we're at a wedding? Well, if I say, I have my brother's wedding coming up. And I have this. And then you might say, okay, well, if it's a wedding, okay. Now, then the conversation was, if it's a wedding of a family member, right, this is where it's going, Georgie. And I'm sitting there, right? And then the next thing was, well, what if it's the 21st? I stood up at that point and I'd never met them. I'd never spoke to them. I just was standing there, brought in as their new psychologist. I stood up and said, lads, I'm fucking out of here. You're wasting my time here. I've sat here, we're an hour and a half into the conversation, and the last fucking 20 minutes has been about alcohol. Not about fucking winning. Not about learning. Not about growing. Why are we having this conversation? What are you thinking about? So I said, if anyone can show me why drinking alcohol takes you closer to winning an Ireland, otherwise we're in the wrong place. Walked out the door. That was probably 15 years ago. They've never won an All-Ireland since. And they'll never win an All-Ireland because they just all ranked the wrong shite. Wrong conversation completely, where you walk into another team and they're saying, Jerry, can you review our meditation practices? Can you analyze how we analyze our opposition? Can you figure out, is there a tweak we can make to our diet? They're saying, can we buy sleep pods so we sleep better? So like, some people are just waffling. So what I learned from that was, I went in there full of ambition. I went in thinking, these lads deserve to win an All-Ireland. These guys deserve, you know, to get over that pain. They fucking deserve nothing. Nothing. Because they're not interested in it. They're happy being the nearly-rans. They're happy. Actually, we'll give it another whack. And what they were terrified about is doing something different. Wow. So we just kind of keep doing the same thing. So ultimately, you can't be more ambitious for people than they are themselves. So they might have all the potential, but do they even want it?
A short break to mention our sponsor, the Health Insurance Authority. If you're anything like me, you might be renewing your health insurance policy year after year without thinking about it. Well, it's time to take your plan and your health into your own hands. If you don't shop around, there's a good chance you're either paying more than you need to, or you could be missing out on benefits that could really support your health right now. The Health Insurance Authority offers a free tool. It makes health insurance comparisons covering every single plan on the market. Head over to the website hia.ie where you can explore your options or get support by phone or email. It's funny that you say that, because I heard Joanne McNally, you know, the Irish comedian Joanne McNally, she set a record in Ireland, sold out like 80 Vicar Streets, has announced a new tour. And yesterday I was talking to somebody who went to see her with a group of 20 people as she practices her new jokes. Now, you would think somebody who could sell out Vicar Street, who has no problem selling tickets, she could so easily become complacent. But she's out there in the small clubs practicing her new show. Even with Tony Robbins, you see him still to this day bouncing on his little trampoline before he goes out on stage. Like, that's excellence, isn't it?
That's what it takes. An athlete once that was number one in the world, consistently number one in the world. And then eventually they changed their entire technique. And they went through 3 years of losing and just disastrous performance, tweaking and testing. And eventually they came back. And after 3 years of rebuilding their technique, now they started to win again. So finally they're back winning, and the commentator says, "Oh, congratulations, you know, it's great to see you're back. It's great to see you. Like, where the hell did you go?" So that he said, "Well, I was rebuilding my technique. I was rebuilding this. I had to analyze, I had to rebuild, and it was a really tough 3 years. I would change my system, I changed my, you know." And he said, "But like, why did you do it?" It's because I knew I could be better. He said, "But you were world number one." And the athlete said, "Yes, but I knew I could be better." Wow. He wasn't doing it to be world number one. He wasn't doing it to beat other people. He was doing it to see how great he could be. So when your life is built around one question, in this short, beautiful life, if I stop waiting for the perfect time, if I stop waiting for permission, if I didn't care about the outcome and I wasn't worried about what it looked like to other people, what would I do? Then go do that. Because all of these people, every athlete that I see, and I'm back in now with another county team and they're phenomenal, there's no guarantee. They wake up every morning, they look themselves in the mirror, they ask, "How do I get better? How do I grow? How do I change?" They go to the well every single day. They dig deep every day with no guarantee that it's going to be enough. But ultimately, what they want to find out is, how good am I going to be? So you have to stop looking left, looking right, waiting for permission. There's nobody holding your back. If you want to do it, do it. Or don't do it. That lovely expression, do or don't do. And then if you do it, as Matthew McConaughey says, don't half-arse it. There is nothing worse than seeing someone half-arse something, whether it's, if it's a painter or someone doing, I hate to see someone half, do it and do it right and give it your all. Because here's the thing, failure is not arriving at the top of the mountain. Failure is sitting in your house when you're too old to even attempt to climb the mountain and wondering what could have been. What I know about these athletes, they turn up every single day. They do everything they need to do with no guarantee, but there is a guarantee. And the guarantee is, when this is over, I'll have no regrets. That's what success is. The outcome is not the outcome. It's who, when you set yourself a challenge, when you step into that unknown, when you go after passion and you go after love, it elevates your frequency. It elevates your emotions. You surround with incredible people. So the goal never matters. What matters is who the goal allows you to become. And if a goal allows you to become more free, more joyous, if it allows you to experience more excitement, then forget the outcome. You've already got the reward.
Wow. Jerry, as we wrap this up, if I could say to you, if there's someone listening and they feel like they can relate to this self-worth point, is there something you can do to just get on the ladder to improve your self-worth?
Yeah, great question, because it's a tough place to start. So I was the world champion of self-criticism. And I used to just beat myself up all the time. I couldn't stop myself from beating myself up. I was horrible to myself. And how I changed that was I found a photograph of me as a 1-year-old child. It's my first birthday. My mother's holding me beside my cake that she'd made out of icing and Smarties, beautiful little cake. And I'm this beautiful little blonde-haired kid, you wouldn't imagine, with big blue eyes and full of joy. This innocent, amazing, beautiful child. And I took that picture and I put it in my wallet. And every time I would start to give out to myself, I would take that photograph out and look at it and say, am I really willing to speak to that child in that way? Then when I wake up in the mornings and I go through my morning routine, I would take that photograph out and say, kid, I'm going to protect you today. I'm going to look after you today because you are special and I'm going to mind you today. So I took it on my responsibility to protect him. So the first person I had to protect him was from me. So a picture of yourself is incredible. And then, of course, Louise Hay, anyone that knows me knows how important that was. Listening to affirmations every day. Mm-hmm. Learning to say words like, I am powerful. I am courageous. I am worthy of all love. I am capable of manifesting magnificent abundance. Only good should come from this. Every single morning, every single night, I listen to Louise Hay 101 Power Thoughts. I said it over and over again. And when you keep saying new stories, you build those new neurons in the brain. You build a whole new identity. So start small. Be compassionate. Find a photograph of you as a child. Then listen to that story and start to change it, whether it's Louise Hay or any affirmation. Challenge your stories. Build that self-worth. Learn to say, I am deserving of all love. I am an incredible human being. I think it's just the work. So that's two simple but really powerful places we can start.
Amazing. Jerry, I really resonate with the affirmations piece because I feel when I, especially around my podcast and stuff, if I'm feeling the little doubts creeping in, I'll always put on positive affirmations and I'm a different person after 2 or 3 minutes. It's actually incredible. It really works.
And it's important, maybe different affirmations. So change them at different times. Or I have Louise Hay that I would listen to almost every day. Sometimes when I need a certain message, I'll put on Joe Dispenza. And sometimes it's Anthony Robbins. And sometimes it's Rocky. So sometimes you have to know, what's the voice I'm going to connect with right now? There are sometimes I'm not able for Tony Robbins. I'm not able for that power. I'm not able for that now. It's Louise Hay. So I think when we talk about affirmations, it's nice to have a selection of different voices who are kind of saying the same thing, but in a different way. Because some days you want the power and you want the energy and you want the motivation. And some days you just need someone to hug you and tell you it's going to be okay. So when we think about affirmations, different voices, different ways. And lastly, I'll say is, if you can sit up in the morning, and before you go into the world, write down 5 things about you that you know are good. Mm. I am strong. I am courageous. Write them every single morning, because when you think something, it fires one part of the brain. When you speak something, it fires the second part of the brain. And when you write it, it's the third part of the brain. So we're magnifying our belief in that statement. And then write down 5 things that you are grateful for. So that practice of self, not just listening to the affirmations, but writing them and speaking them out loud, triples the impact they have, and then gratitude. And that's one thing probably, I think we all focus on what we don't have at times and what we need to create. I think it's a lovely place to start every morning of gratitude, because when we practice gratitude, it actually makes us feel safer, it makes us feel calm. And when you're practicing gratitude, one of the expressions I say to Mary all the time is, thank God for you and thank God for me. Thank God. Thank you for you. I say thank God for me. thank God for me, because I know I'm good, and I know I have value, and I know I have worth. So it's easy for me to say thank God for Miriam. Thank God for me too.
I love it, Jerry. Thank you so much. That was amazing.
My pleasure. Thank you.
A huge thank you for tuning in today. Please share this podcast with as many people as possible, and we'll see you on Thursday.
And when things are really tough and they're really rough and nothing's working, but there's something inside of you that says, I just have to follow that, because you don't know who you're going to meet.